You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
So most people know that one of the ways to scale investing is through partnership. Then again, most of the beginner investors that I meet have this idea that the key to partnership is that both people put in money, both people do work, and then you split the gains of that based on the amount of money that you put in to start with. But this is actually the simplest and honestly the most vulnerable and perhaps least advantageous way of structuring real estate partners. So in this show today, we're going to be talking about what are some of the better business models that more advanced investors use to structure their partnerships effectively.
Welcome to the Real Escape Investing Podcast, where we guide you to escape the constraints of time, geography, and finance through real estate. And now here's your host, Terry Schauer.
Hey, real estate fan, and thanks for tuning into the Real Escape Investing show today. I have a great show lined up for us, and it actually comes out of some conversations that we've been having in my Equity Builders Club coaching program. And so as we've been recently exploring the topic of partnerships, one of the things that I find really interesting is that a lot of more novice investors think about partnerships in the real estate field as a question of pooling one's money with someone else. So for example, the most common thing is to be 50-50. If we want to acquire an asset together and we don't quite have enough money to acquire the down payment on our own, or perhaps we don't have enough borrowing capacity to take down that asset on our own, what we're going to do is just split that according to the amount of down payment that we put in. So let's say I have 30% of capital and my partner has 70%. We're just going to split everything 70-30, and then we're going to somehow split the work together. And so when people come to the real estate field and think about how they're going to do partnerships, this is really the most common mental frame that more novice and beginner investors have when they think about partnership. What I want to do in this episode is to really explode that for you and help you understand that this is really not how more advanced investors do business. And I want to give you a little bit of insight into why that is. But now, before we dive into the meat of this really cool episode, I do just want to remind you the way in which you should be using this show, the way in which you should be consuming the content, and to give you some insight into why I keep recording these episodes week after week. For me, the goal is really to help you, investor, go about making sound decisions. And so that means taking action that's going to be effective and doing things in a way that's going to be optimal for you to grow your portfolio, or perhaps even to start if that's the place that you are in your journey. And so rather than taking a particular moral position on any of the things that I'm going to talk about, or take particular political views, or perhaps look at the macro context, my goal is really to help you think through what are the best things, what is the best course of action that you can take as you're trying to set yourself up optimally. While we're on the topic of action, I do want to share with you one concrete step that you can take right now as far as taking action in the real estate field, and that is to join me at the next Equity Builders Club networking event. If you're in and around Montreal, even if you're not, take a plane, grab a bus, take a flight. I know transport is a bit complicated right now. Either way, the important thing is to get around other like-minded individuals who are as geeky and excited about real estate as you are, and who can help you learn some of the stuff that I talk about in these episodes week after week. So if that sounds like a good idea to you, just head over to equitybuildersclub.com/events to grab your ticket for the next meetup. You can use my promo code ML5, that's Mindful Landlord, like my book that is available on Amazon, and 5 to get $5 off the ticket for your next event. So promo code ML5. And then without further ado, let's jump right back into the meat of the episode, which is to think through a little bit how partnerships are structured optimally for fairness and also to reward the different skills that people have when they come in. Perhaps that is to bring capital to the table, or perhaps that is to bring expertise. And the optimal way to structure partnerships, as we will learn in this episode, is really a question of compensating everyone for what it is that they're truly bringing to the table. So let's then talk a little bit about why it is that so many investors initially begin with these 50-50 partnerships, or these type of partnerships where everybody brings a little bit of capital and a little bit of work, and we are to assume that they are then compensated on this prorated version or on like proportional to the amount of down payment money that they put in. Part of the reason that that becomes a logical next step is that there's a perception of fairness. People tend to come to this and be like, well, we both put in money and we both do the work. And as a result, we should reap the rewards that are proportional to the amount of capital that we put in at the get-go. The truth is that having been in a number of partnerships like this and having started my investing career, that the first partnerships that I did were on a model like this. And what ends up going wrong is that very often those partnerships are unequal from a human perspective. And this means that if one partner has more skills, more experience, more time, not necessarily more capital, but perhaps more capital, that person then ends up selling themselves short in the long term with that partnership. I'm going to assume that if you're the one who's listening to this show and you're thinking about how to grow and scale your portfolio, perhaps the people that you have in mind to partner with are not the ones listening to this show and are not the ones taking the time to educate themselves and to leverage all the good ideas that you're trying to put yourself in contact with. As I feel like I am talking to the more educated potential partner, I want you to just be aware of some of the weaknesses of this. And so the reality is that one partner usually ends up carrying more weight. And then what happens as time moves forward for that weight carrying partner is that they become better at what they're doing. And so if one of you is constantly trolling the MLS to find deals and running cash flow and taking all of the tenant calls, doing all of the bookkeeping, what's going to happen is that you are working out that investing muscle every single day. And so the skills that you're building and the knowledge that you have over time is going to be worth more, and you're going to be contributing in a disproportionate way to the creation of the upside and to the making of good deals. Where I'm trying to go with this is to open your mind to the fact that those skills are worth money and they're worth being paid in an outsized portion of equity. And so if you're, in a sense, the brains of the operation or the person who's busy building that real estate muscle, don't sell yourself short by getting into a 50-50 model with someone who perhaps you need in order to qualify for a mortgage or because you want to have access to a larger amount of capital to do a size of a deal that you want to do. But don't end up selling yourself short, because if your skills and your time and your mental load are integral to the project succeeding and then ultimately really having the value of those assets appreciate over time, well, then you deserve to be paid in a larger amount of equity in the same way as if someone were a fund manager. So the parallel that you can use to think about this and to change your mental model is to say that, for example, if you're hiring a hedge fund manager or if you're investing in a mutual fund, you're the one who's giving that person essentially your money to play with, and then they are the ones responsible for making those financial decisions that are going to result in you having a certain amount of profit. Those fund managers or anybody who's managing your money is going to take a certain percentage of the profit that they create or a certain proportion of that money in fees every single year. If you are essentially the brains operator of the partnership, the one who's making the decisions and whose good decisions are making the endeavor profitable, well, you deserve to be paid in a certain amount disproportionate of upside. Let me now also just open your eyes to some of the other problems with this type of 50-50 partnership that I have lived personally in the past myself. The first one is part of a misalignment of effort, which then inevitably leads to resentment. And so I will tell you that even if you have the best possible intentions when you're getting into a 50-50 partnership with someone, your plan from the get-go is that everyone's going to have equal amounts of time and equal amounts of competence, because this is another huge thing. And I've had this happen in partnerships that I have set up. So even though we have the best intentions of splitting the work 50-50, let's say somebody does accounting, or I'll do tenant relations, or someone's responsible for managing rentals, what typically happens over time is that a different amount of time that's available, so that partners have different time constraints, and they also typically have different levels of competence. And so if ultimately you feel like your asset or an aspect of the management of that asset is being done by someone who either doesn't have the time to do the job properly or who lacks the competence to do it properly, that's not only going to be a recipe for resentment, it's also going to be a recipe for the partnership or for the project to be performing suboptimally. And so that's something that in just about every type of partnership like this that I've ever involved myself in, a misalignment or a kind of an imbalance has declared itself over time. And that then the decision making starts to get, a little bit difficult because as the resentment builds, then the parties end up kind of wanting to go in opposite directions. And ultimately, the more skilled partner gets underpaid in terms of equity. And so then what happens is that these type of partnerships actually weirdly are more fragile. Even though they might seem at the get-go like they're kind of intuitively more fair, the fact that this resentment is building and that there's often a competence gap means that the partnership itself kind of becomes fragile because it lacks clarity over time. And the way that this typically ends up playing out is that if you are, for example, deciding at the beginning, okay, well, you do rentals and I'll do bookkeeping and you take care of maintenance and I'll take care of this. And then over a year or 2 years, because ultimately these are long-term projects, it becomes clear that someone is not pulling or that perhaps their work is not done properly. And then because there's this underlying feeling of resentment, it's then something that can fragilize the partnership over time, either because you're making less money than you should be, or because people want to pull the plug on it because there's a frustration. And to be fully transparent, like I have lost friendships over this because even though perhaps the project was profitable in the long term, the relationship that I had with that partner couldn't withstand the resentment of those misaligned efforts. And because I felt like I wasn't getting compensated properly for all the work I put in because of the agreement we made to be 50-50 at the beginning, when the project ended, even though perhaps we both made money, what ended up being thrown under the bus was really the relationship. So if you're sitting there eyeing that partnership with a friend or a family member or someone, a work colleague, somebody who's around you, and your thought process is, well, I think I can sell them this idea of 50-50 partnership and we're each going to take on a certain role, just be aware that there is an innate fragility to that unless both of you really bring very complementary skills and unless you have a very high level of competence. And so that is the one caveat that I want to bring in here is that if you are both extremely experienced real estate professionals who bring very complementary things to the table, and if you're very sure that that person, your partner's time commitment and involvement in the project is going to be going forward in a way that they're not going to be neglecting their responsibilities or not putting in the time that it's necessary to have the partnership do as well as it could, those are kind of the conditions for this to work properly, is that both of you have to be extremely committed to the business. You have to have the visibility that going forward, you're going to have the time commitment to do it. And you need to be of similar levels of competence. And then over time, putting in similar levels of work to increase your competence. Because let's face it, if you're purchasing a property on day one and one person is spending more time working on it, the skills and the experience that that active partner is going to gain is quickly going to lead to them being more competent than the one who is not spending so much time in their real estate activities. So I want to then tell you a little bit about how the outsized portion of equity can be introduced and the way in which I discovered this in my property management practice. A perhaps better way of doing this is to consider that those different levels of experience, the different amount of time commitment and the work, and then ultimately the competence that one partner brings to the table deserve to be paid in an outsized part of equity. And I'll tell you the way that I began this. So back in the day, I had a couple of residential properties. And because I'm in Canada and it's extremely difficult to scale a residential portfolio, so typically after two or three residential properties, and when I say residential, I mean four doors and less. So that's all the way up to a fourplex. Once you've bought two residential properties, typically everybody's tapped out of borrowing capacity. So that happened to me when I was in my mid-20s. And I wasn't able to scale my investing portfolio any further until I learned the multifamily game. And that's a whole other story. What I did instead was to build a property management practice. So I had a property management business and I was charging fees. And after a certain amount of time, I began to realize how much money I was making my clients, arguing with them also about getting my fees paid. I remember this moment like it was yesterday, where I had a client for whom I bought 3 garbage bins because the garbage men are constantly destroying the bins, right? Like they come, they pick up the garbage, then they throw the bins, and then the bins get broken. And so the tenants were then not throwing the garbage in the right place and the raccoons were ripping up the bags. And like, you can imagine the scenario. So I took it upon myself to order 3 garbage bins for my client. And he then got extremely angry at me about the $300 bill that I sent him for those new garbage cans. And then just because I was angry, I sat down and I calculated after the 2 years that I had been managing his building, how much I raised the value of that building just by making smart management decisions. And while my monthly management bill was $300, I had actually increased the value of his asset by about $300,000. So at this stage, I realized, hang on a second, my management skills are worth way more than that $300 that I'm charging my client every month. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to start managing for equity as opposed to managing for management fees. And that then became a key ingredient in how I was able to scale from those just 9 residential doors all the way up to the 100 doors that I own currently. So by then pitching this management for equity that allowed me to be paid in upside based on my performance as a property manager really allowed me to make a lot of money and to ensure that I was compensated for the value that I was creating. And I think that this is really the main thing that you kind of need to open your eyes to. So the operator passive investor model is really the model that more experienced real estate people and people who've managed to scale their portfolios, this is the type of partnership that they are typically looking for. What this ends up being is that one person does all of the work. So for example, deal sourcing, managing renovations, tenants, doing the financing. So taking care of all of the operations and being the strategic brains behind the operation, and that the passive partner is basically coming in with either capital or borrowing capacity. In this business model, if you have the skills and the competence to be an operator, you are typically getting a higher percentage of the deal, even if you're not putting any down payment money or any capital on the line whatsoever. And so an operator can take anywhere from 30 to 50% of the upside of the forced appreciation that they're able to do. So for example, if you're taking the delta between the purchase price and the value of the building after a 3 to 5 year financing term, well, then you as the operator, it's an industry standard to walk away with 30 to 50% of that increase in equity. And so you will see that this is actually a very, very far cry from that initial thought process of like, let's like beginners go in 50-50 and you'll do half the work and I'll do half the work. Because if you're assuming that the operator, and again, I'm assuming here that I'm talking to somebody who lives and breathes real estate and who wants to get really good at this game. And if you do get really good at that game, you're selling yourself short with a 50-50 partnership. You should be looking at getting a higher percentage of the equity amount in the deal just because you are doing those things that operators do. So whether that's finding those great deals, making the management decisions, hiring and firing the manager, finding the tenants, putting together creative financing, those are skills that are worth money. And they're not worth a little bit of money. They're worth a lot of money. They're worth a equity stake, a disproportionate equity stake in the amount of the fruits that come from managing those deals in the most optimal way. The other thing that's great about this model, and in a way, this is actually probably one of my favorite things about it, is that it completely minimizes that resentment problem. Because if you are going into the deal assuming that you're going to be doing all the work or knowing and being contractually obligated to make all of the decisions, to do all the heavy lifting, to make sure that the accounting gets done, and that it's then done according to a level of competence that is commensurate with your great knowledge, and that you're in a sense not obligated to play down to the level of a partner who's perhaps a little bit more ignorant than you are, this is just not only a recipe for success of the project and having it have a better financial result, but it's also really great from the perspective that you're not going to be building up resentment because you're doing more than 50% of the work, or else your partner is perhaps doing work in a way that's less than of optimal competence. Ultimately, that's really what I wanted to lay out for you in this episode, is just to have you understand that the more advanced model, or the way in which people are able to scale and to make a lot of money in real estate investing when they get into partnerships, is to move toward this operator slash passive investor model. And so it's untrue to say that you can immediately go and pitch this if you've never done any deals before, but that ultimately, as your experience grows over time, this is a model that you want to be moving towards. And that, just as a matter of fact, or something that I want to flag here, this is actually one of the things that we do at the Equity Builders Club, is to teach investors how to move towards this type of partnership model and to give you the tools to become that operator, to become that skilled real estate person who's going to be able to demand an outsized part of equity in a deal, just because you have the knowledge and the competence to create more value, and that it's only logical that that value then comes back to you at the end when you exit, or when you refinance, or do whatever you might be doing. So, real estate fan, I hope that this episode has helped to educate you and perhaps open your mind to what partnerships look like once you get a little bit further down the investing rabbit hole, and once you are able to build your skills in a way that truly generates value for yourself and anyone who is lucky enough to partner with you. And what I will also tell you is that as you build those skills, and as you begin to realize that the competence in the real estate field is something that people need to pay for, and that if they want to get access to those money-making skills that you have, they're actually privileged to be partnering with you. This also allows you to then tie your compensation to performance and not to some strange idea of what is fair just because of the amount of money that people are putting in at the beginning of a deal. I do just want to caution you and sort of give you a call to action that if you are a budding real estate pro, somebody who's busy developing their skills, don't undervalue your skills, don't undervalue your time, and learn how to negotiate yourself equity, managing for equity, or else if you are looking at getting into a partnership, taking a disproportionate amount of the equity based on results, obviously. So always, always based on results, to be sure that you are clear on the fact that if you're able to generate value for your partners, then it's only logical that you be compensated in a share of that value. I do also want to say that in the coming weeks, I'm going to be doing another couple of episodes on partnership, because this is a question that comes up over and over again in our coaching program. So do stay tuned for that. Otherwise, real estate fan, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to me today. We can tune in again next week, same time, same day, same bat channel, for another episode of Real Escape Investing. And until then, if you do want to check out one of our networking events or some of the other great stuff that we do at the Equity Builders Club, you can head over to equitybuildersclub.com/events. And you can use my promo code, so ML5, that's Mindful Landlord, like my book, ML5, to get $5 off an event ticket. And if you are curious to learn a little bit more about the partnership models that we teach, or a little bit about how this works, you can also book a discovery call with me through the website. And I would be very happy to have a chat with you and see if there's any way that I can help you become better at real estate investing.